Welcome back. It's another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home with Marcus Papp and Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, we're now one step closer to bringing back the woolly mammoth. One person's nefarious use of cloning, and staff at a veterinary hospital take an extremely novel approach to caring for a young fox. Plus, on this day in history, a Confederate ship sinks and is later found on the same day, except 102 years apart. That's coming up on Cool Stuff.
We have some good news and bad news coming out of the world of cloning. A company that is working on resurrecting the woolly mammoth has reached an important milestone. George Church, a geneticist at Harvard University and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology who co-founded Colossal Biosciences in Dallas, said they were able to create a long-sought-after stem cell from the closest living relative of the woolly mammoth. Quote, "This is probably the most significant step in the early stages of this project," end quote. Colossal Biosciences isn't just working on the woolly mammoth. They also have been trying to bring back the dodo bird and other extinct species using cloning and genetic engineering. The company said that the closest living relative to the mammoth are the Asian elephants, and for the first time, they created induced pluripotent stem cells. However, don't expect to see that woolly mammoth anytime soon. This is a first step in a long process. According to Church, quote, "This is kind of like asking Neil Armstrong if he plans to go to Mars. Kind of misses the point that he just landed on the moon on Apollo 11, end quote. They don't expect to bring the woolly mammoth back exactly how it was before, either. Instead, it'll be more like elephants with key traits of the mammoth. Per Church, quote, "We don't necessarily need to bring back a perfect genome of the mammoth, because we want one that has certain things that mammoths didn't have. Like, we want them to be resistant to the herpes virus, which is causing a huge fraction of infant elephants to die," end quote. He added that they plan on bringing back herds of woolly mammoths, not just one. Not everyone is on board with this, though. Carl Flessa, a geosciences professor at the University of Arizona, says he thinks it is irresponsible and asks what they expect to get out of cloning the mammoth. Quote,
I had the same thought. I did. As you were reading this, Reggie, I understand how breakthrough it is, how cool it sounds in theory, but why?
Well, according to Flessa, quote, "First of all, I think you're going to get a bit of a freak show in a zoo somewhere. And then you're going to release a herd into the Arctic tundra? Is that herd going to go marching off to its second extinction in the face of global warming?" End quote. Which, again, like you pointed out, valid criticisms, valid questions. Colossal Biosciences say the pluripotent stem cells won't just be used to bring back the woolly mammoth, but will benefit the elephant conservation community as well. Church defended the research, saying this program could help protect endangered species like the Asian elephant by expanding their habitat and will lead to scientists studying the animals more. In fact, he believes that reintroducing the mammoth could also help fight global warming by restoring ecosystems back to a way that will reduce the amount of carbon that is released into the atmosphere. Oliver Ryder, director of conservation genetics at the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, has praised the research, saying, quote, "Producing induced pluripotent stems has proved to be very difficult for some species, notoriously the elephant. It's a great advancement to have been able to accomplish this for elephants. It opens up new possibilities for conserving species genetic diversity, preventing extinction, and contributing to the sustainability of the species. There's an enormous potential," end quote. He added that the cells can be used to study biology, reproduction, and health of elephants. Now, some dissenters believe we shouldn't be focused on the woolly mammoth. Instead, we should be looking at living species that are on the verge of going to extinct today and try to make sure those numbers stay where they are instead of bringing back these extinct animals.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point as well. And look, I could be convinced otherwise. I'm not a scientist. I don't understand all the ins and outs of this and all of the potential implications. Obviously, these folks believe there are some real benefits to conducting this research. And so I'd prefer to be educated on that. But as an uneducated bystander hearing this story, I go back to what I said a few minutes ago. I don't really get why we would bring back an extinct species short of saying how cool it is and look at us, look what we were able to do, which, again, is a tremendous accomplishment in many ways, scientifically speaking. But I don't know that you're setting those animals that you bring back, setting them up for success in today's world. And conversely, couldn't you argue that it's essentially like in introducing an invasive species in some ways? Because those animals, in so many ways, do not belong on this version of Earth. I think you could at least argue that.
Well, that's where I'm curious what Church believes will be the way to reduce the amount of carbon that is released in the atmosphere by bringing them back. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but you know, if there is ways of doing that, if we can bring back animals or plants or something that help with this process, I guess we should give it a chance or consider it at least.
Yeah, but I go back to the quote about a freak show in a zoo. I certainly hope it doesn't come to that. This doesn't need to be for exhibition purposes. That sounds just asinine to me.
Now, whether or not you agree with bringing the woolly mammoth back, here is one I think we can all agree is a bad story about cloning. An 80-year-old Montana man has pleaded guilty to 2 felony wildlife crimes. Now, what does this have to do with cloning? Well, he wanted to charge people to hunt, quote, massive hybrid sheep, end quote, that he had on his ranch from illegally importing animal parts from Central Asia, cloning the sheep, and then breeding enormous versions of them. Arthur Jack Schubarth has a 215-acre, as he put it, alternative livestock ranch in Montana that he has been running since 2013. His alternative livestock included hybrids of mountain sheep, mountain goats, and other large animals that people usually pay a lot of money to hunt as trophies. He used biological tissue from the Marco Polo sheep, which comes from Kyrgyzstan and are the largest in the world. The average male can weigh over 300 pounds and has horns that are over 5 feet wide. They are endangered and protected by international and U.S. laws. Using the sheep parts, he had an unnamed lab create 165 cloned embryos. In a press release from the federal authorities, quote, Schubert then implanted the embryos into ewes on his ranch, resulting in a single, pure genetic male Marco Polo Argali that he named Montana Mountain King, or MMK, end quote. Once he had his MMK, he used its semen to impregnate female sheep, creating the hybrids. He forged documents when he needed to transport the animals and even sold the MMK semen to other breeders. One of the offspring of MMK that they called Montana Black Magic, he attempted to sell to a person in Texas for $10,000. Attorney General Todd Kim from the Justice Department's Environmental and Natural Resources Division said, quote, this is an audacious scheme to create massive hybrid sheep species to be sold and hunted as trophies. In pursuit of this scheme, Schubert violated international law and the Lacey Act, both which protect the viability and health of native populations of animals, end quote. Now, supposedly, Schubert conspired with at least 5 other people, but they were not named in the indictment. He could face up to 5 years in prison and a fine of $250,000. His sentence is scheduled to be handed down in July. To be honest, Marcus, I feel like 5 years in prison, $250,000, what he could potentially be making on this, I don't know if that's going to, I mean, granted, he's 80. Is he going to live to be 85 in prison? I don't know. But for the normal person, is that enough of a sentence to discourage them from the potential money they could make doing this?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I mean, if he made $10,000 off one sale, I guess I don't know ultimately what he pulled in. But this type of story, it really frustrates me when you hear these sort of things that people just go out of their way to create these animals for what? For hunting as trophies? I mean, not to go off on some or get on some soapbox, but how is this a trophy? What have you done to achieve anything as someone out there hunting these things? I mean, they're literally defenseless if you're shooting at them. It's just all around. I think it's a sad story, sad that it came to this. And all I can say is I guess I'm happy that they're bringing some justice to the individual responsible in this case. And hopefully it does discourage others to take similar steps. The weird thing, Reggie, is seemingly you have to have some level. I know he's not doing the cloning himself. It said he worked with an unnamed lab, so I'd love to know, are they somehow going to be punished for partaking in this, or were they naive to the plot? I don't know. But you'd have to have some level of scientific know-how to go through this process and make it work. So I'm not sure, are others out there even equipped to take such a thing on? If they were, I would have assumed we'd see more of this type of crime than what we're currently seeing.
And knowledge of the species, because you can't just mate 2 animals. That doesn't work. They have to be compatible in some way. You know, that he couldn't just take this Marco Polo animal and grab some other one. And it's not guaranteed they're going to have babies. So you have to have some knowledge of that. But it kind of reminds me of, I don't want to, I guess, belittle it and compare it to a movie, but Jurassic Park, the whole idea of we could clone these animals, but you know, we're going to create this freak version because that's going to be more of a showstopper. That's essentially what he did here is create a freak version that people would want to hunt more.
Yeah, it's all for people's financial gain at the end of the day. They don't care about the animals they're creating. They don't care about anything other than making a buck off it. And that's the part that really frustrates me. Humans.
Welcome to Codependence, the weekly podcast that gives you direct access to me, Maya Allen, and my sis, Sierra Miller. Every week, we give you insider access into our sisterhood and lives. Part self-help and part comedic relief, Codependence is all about letting your guard down. Expect a lot of laughs and maybe some tears as we navigate this crazy world together. Join us every Wednesday for this funny, tea-spilling, shade-throwing podcast.
Well, if you see any of the photos associated with this next story, you'll likely think they're straight out of a B-horror movie. I can't get those previews from that Five Nights at Freddy's flick out of my head. But it's all for a good cause. Per the Associated Press, employees at the Richmond Wildlife Center in Virginia are doing their best to act and look like mother foxes. Now, the obvious question is, why? Well, they're attempting to feed and care for an orphaned kit that found her way into their care, and they'd like to eventually be able to release the fox back into the wilderness, and they don't want her getting accustomed to humans or human care. Interesting approach. Per a social media post from the Wildlife Center, quote, "It's important to make sure that the orphans that are raised in captivity do not become imprinted upon or habituated to humans," end quote. In a video accompanying the post last week, Executive Director Melissa Stanley is shown wearing a red fox mask and rubber gloves while feeding the tiny kit from a syringe. In fact, this mask looks like it was created in a papier-mâché class. That's why I used the B-horror movie reference in the open there. The fox sits on top of a large stuffed animal fox as well that's apparently supposed to look like her mother. Though I'm left wondering what Stanley herself is supposed to be in this equation, because she's the one wearing the mask, doing the feeding, and yet the stuffed animal next to the kit is supposed to be the mother fox? More questions. The same post explains why staff are wearing the mask to feed her, minimizing human sounds, creating visual barriers, and taking other precautions. All those measures are intended to make it easier, as we said, for the kit to once again take to the wild. Now, the kit was admitted to the center back on February 29th after a man walking his dog found her in an alley in Richmond. Thinking she was a kitten, he turned her over to the Richmond Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. She was less than 24 hours old, and her umbilical stump was still attached. Now, before taking this unorthodox approach, Wildlife Center staff initially tried to locate the kit's mother and her den site so they could reunite them. Somehow they found the den, but were told by the grounds superintendent that the foxes had been trapped and removed. Stanley suspects the fox kit either fell out of a trap or off of the back of the trapper's truck. Now, since that time, staff at the Wildlife Center have been taking turns feeding the kit every 2 to 4 hours, all while wearing the fox mask. In addition to the large stuffed animal meant to mimic the kit's mother, staff also put a smaller stuffed red fox in her enclosure. She cuddles up to the smaller stuffed animal at the end of the video there that we'll link to. Said Stanley, quote, "The goal is to release animals back into the wild, not only to give them a greater chance of survival, but to recognize their own species and to reproduce to carry on their wildlife population," end quote. And to that end, the center immediately began looking for other red fox kits of the same age and weight within the rehabilitation community. They were able to locate 3 other kits in a rehab setting in Virginia, so the fox kit will be transferred to the Animal Education and Rescue Organization, which plans to eventually release all the kits back into the wild together.
I took a look at that story, and I agree that mask is kind of frightening and does seem like a horror movie situation.
Yeah, this is one you have to see, so we'll have the link to the visual there, but what a novel approach to trying to nurse this kit back to health. I guess I'm not a veterinarian, right? I'm not an expert, but I find it hard to believe that the fox wouldn't have some level of recognition to say, even at this extremely young age, to go, you're not really what I am, one of me. But again, what do I know?
Taking a look at this day in history, March 19th, 1863, the most powerful cruiser that the Confederate built, the SS Georgiana, was destroyed on her maiden voyage. The iron-hulled propeller steamer was built in Great Britain and sank in 14 feet of water by the Isle of Palms in South Carolina. The ship carried munitions and medicines valued at over $1 million. The supplies aboard the ship were owned by John Fraser and Company, owned by George Alfred Trenholm, who Rhett Butler from Gone with the Wind was based on. Her maiden voyage came when she left Scotland and encountered Union Navy ships that were blockading Charleston, South Carolina. The ship was heavily damaged and scuttled by her captain, a British naval officer who was delivering it to Charleston to, quote, receive her officers to be fitted out as a cruiser there. She had 180 men on board with an armament of guns and gun carriages in her hold, end quote. And if you didn't know, scuttled means the crew sank the ship or finished sinking the ship on their own and abandoned it. What is interesting is that the wreck was discovered exactly 102 years later, on March 19th, 1965, by a teenage diver and pioneer underwater archaeologist E. Lee Spence. He was 17 years old when he discovered the wreck. Inside, Spence found surgeries, munitions, and medicines that'd be worth around $115 million today. However, he didn't find the 350 pounds of gold that were believed to be hidden on the ship. That gold, if it were there, would have been worth around $130 million today. Spence also found the wreck of the Hunley, a Civil War Confederate submarine. Overall, he believes he has salvaged over $50 million in artifacts, with some of his research being used to discover two side-wheeled steamships called the SS Republic and SS Central America. With that, he believes over $1 billion of treasure has been recovered just from those vessels and overall. So overall, this guy has contributed to, I guess, bringing in a lot of artifacts from the Civil War era.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I guess the one thing that sort of jumped out at me, and this will show how naive I am, is that the Confederate forces had a ship commissioned to be built by the United Kingdom. I had no idea that they were working with outside countries to bring supplies in especially large ships. And obviously this one is fascinating because it never even made it into the hands of Confederate forces. It was still under the command of a UK acting officer there at the time when it was ultimately sunk.
Yeah, and that makes me wonder, do you still owe them? I mean, they built it, they shipped it, but you never received it. Do you still have to pay them?
I would say I'm not paying for anything that we didn't officially receive and sign off on. Now, if it had changed hands and it had sunk while the Confederate forces were operating it, then yeah, you likely would have had to pay. But in this case, it never got to me, you know, not to make a crude analogy, but if UPS or Amazon or FedEx don't deliver something that I ordered, I'm going to have a problem with that. If it was broken in transit, yeah, I'm not paying for that. I'm calling and complaining and getting my money back.
And you didn't spend how much money on an actual ship that was supposed to be like basically a kind of a flagship for your Navy.
Yeah, and it does beg the question, do you pay for said ship prior to its arrival? I mean, obviously no electronic currency transfers at the time. So was the British commanding officer expected to pick up payment at that time too? Also, how was he getting home?
I'm assuming just taking a boat ride home. Were there just boats
to catch? Hey, look, let's check the schedule. When's the next boat back to the UK come through?
Well, I mean, really, in general, it's risky in a civil war. Do you actually want to sell supplies to either side? Because if the one side loses, you're probably never getting paid.
Well,
it's
again,
not going to exist anymore.
When does said payment come through? I would think that they, you know, that was something that crossed their mind ahead of time.
Yeah, maybe you pay ahead of time, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
there was the Confederate gold.
I don't know why, but that's what I got hung up on.
I'm still fascinated, though, that the person who found it was 17 years old when he discovered that wreck. I can tell you, I was not diving into the ocean looking for anything at 17 years old. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. You can reach us at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Also, like us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. He's Marcus Path. I'm Reggie Rizzou. We'll be back with more cool stuff tomorrow.